Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Also, just so you know, there's two versions of this podcast. The one you're about to listen to is only the English translations of what was said. If you want to hear the full conversation with the Japanese intact, go ahead and check out the other version of this podcast that currently exists. They've both been pushed to iTunes, so you should be able to see them both. Otherwise, you can check AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Both of them are there. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Hey everybody, I'm Zach Birchie. Welcome to ANCAST. We have an extremely special show. We're honored to have these guys on the program. They are the creative team behind the currently being kickstarted anime called Under the Dog, and they're legends in the industry. Again, very honored to have these guys on the program. First, we have Mr. Hiroaki Yura, who is a producer on the program on Under the Dog, and he's also been the producer of things like The Disappearance of Haruhi Suzumiya, Steins Gate, things you've heard of. Mr. Yura, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hi, thank you very much.
He's also going to be our translator, so you're going to be hearing his voice most of the time translating for our other two guests, considered to be one of the finest action directors in the industry. This guy, you've heard of him. He directed Sword of the Stranger, Blast of Tempest, Hanasaku Iroha, a mountain of other things. He's done storyboarding for things like Ghost in the Shell, Wolf's Rain. It's Masahiro Ando. Mr. Ando, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Mr. Ando says, I am an animation director from Japan, and this time I will be doing the direction for Under the Dog.
And we also are lucky enough to have the writer, Mr. Jiro Ishii, who produced the Nintendo DS game that many of you have played, 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors. He worked at Level 5 on the Professor Layton games, and he wrote the story for Under the Dog way back in 1997. Mr. Ishii, thank you for coming on the show.
Mr. Ishii says, I am Jiro Ishii. And this time, usually he does a lot of direction for video games and stuff like that. But this time he's going to be working as a writer for Under the Dog.
All right. Excellent. Okay. So we've got some questions for you, and then we're gonna take some questions from your fans on Twitter. But let's start with the basics here. For people who don't know or aren't familiar with it, can you just give us a rundown? What is Under the Dog about?
Can I have Ishii-san answer this question?
Absolutely, yeah.
Sure. Under the Dog is a piece of work written in 1997 for a TV animation series. However, the original 1997 version of the TV animation series did not kick off, and it has been left in the dust until last year, where he met me, the producer for Under the Dog. We decided to kickstart it, that's how all of this started. In 1997, there was a lot of influential animation such as Evangelion, and back then, Mr. Ishii was a very, very very new to the whole creation industry, and he was fresh into the industry, therefore. There's a lot of 90s animation influence in the original writing. So when he showed the writing to me, I felt that there was, felt that there was a lot of Ghost in the Shell and Akira influence with this writing. And I felt this would be a perfect opportunity to kickstart with the rest of the world. So in the 90s, in the United States and possibly Japan, the topic of guns and girls was just about to begin. And it feels a little negative, but this piece of writing was one of the, he believes it's one of the first writing to actually explore the topic of guns and girls. In 2014, what we like to do is to deny the guns and girls topic and then remake it. You know, the background with Ghost in the Shell and something realistic like that isn't so popular in Japan, we think it's important to do the remake as a, you know, a new happening in the games, in the anime industry. So there's a lot of films done for teenager and guns, but we want to make it much more realistic, and also explore the tragedy behind actual teenagers and guns, the teenagers and gun topic. We also want to delve into the philosophical and the science fiction aspect that Ghost in the Shell did so well. That's about it.
Okay.
Arigato.
So I wanted to ask a little bit about that first draft. So initially, were you thinking like a full 26-episode TV series for this? I mean, in the late 90s when this was originally coming to be, that was sort of the standard then. What was in its original incarnation? What was your vision for what this show would be? Would it be a full show, or would it be 12 episodes, or what was the idea?
He was Mr. Shi says that he was thinking originally in regards to the 97 writing he was thinking of two seasons. So I think that's 26 episodes.
Okay, right. So so a standard length for the late 90s, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Things have changed since then.
Yes.
how much about that script has, obviously a lot has been changed, and your goal now is not as long as a 26-episode television series. So how much of the script has changed from 1997 to now?
May I answer that?
Yeah, sure. Whoever you want to, you're in charge of who's answering what. So
great,
just go right ahead.
We haven't decided exactly how it's going to change from the original script, but we do have a good general direction. The characters have to change because we wanted to make it more international, mm-hmm. and more in line with the present day crisis and the problems that we feel today. So there's more. There's more topics in common with present-day people. In terms of the length, we are still thinking of variable length. And I myself don't believe in what Tezuka-san implemented of 30 minutes of anime, roughly 30 minutes of episodes per week, because we feel that's rushed, and it doesn't tell the story very well. I am very deeply influenced by the way Yamato 2199, the new series, mm-hmm. And also things like Ghost in the Shell Arise and Gundam Unicorn present itself. It's a high quality OVA presented not every week, but over the course of several months or even years, as may be, and be able to tell the story in a format that the director wants it, in this case, Ando-san. We don't want to be forced into a situation where we had to compromise because of how TV stations work, or the bottom line is we don't want to compromise.
Right. Would doing like a theatrical sort of thing also involve too much compromise? I mean, so is that format, the OVA that basically releases when you're finished with it instead of on a crazy schedule? Is that,
yeah,
that's the ideal, or would theatrical also get in the way?
Well, our aim is to do trilogy of feature film length movies.
Right.
We also feel because this world is so big, and we also character development is main focus for Under the Dog. Mm-hmm. We want to basically introduce those characters along seven or eight OVAs, and then get into the trilogy of films. But of course, in terms of feature filmmaking and stuff like that, that's going to involve investors and people like that. It's going to be it's going to be my battle to make sure that we keep our creative freedom in order to do what we want.
Right, and so that's obviously where the crowdfunding comes in.
Exactly. I mean, if we can fund the whole trilogy of film, that's that'll be great. But just in case we can't, then I'm prepared to talk to investors and make sure we keep our creative freedom, yet be able to do what we want and be funded at the same time.
All right. Okay. So a few more questions just about the story and what you're sort of aiming for with this. So you mentioned that you're aiming for a more international audience, and I would make the argument that looking at your promotional materials for this and just at the Kickstarter page, this definitely seems like the sort of thing that would be much more popular in the West than it would be in Japan. Would you sort of agree with that characterization?
Absolutely. Well, the fact is, I was born in Japan, but I was brought up in Australia since when I was 6 till when I was 28. I'm 33 now, and I've seen and played video games and anime, and was brought up with influences of Western films or Hollywood films. And I do agree in many things about what's going wrong with the animation industry in Japan, and I don't want to do a anime that really basically sells to Japan. I don't think the production committee in Japan are only focused in making films that are acceptable to the otaku or the hardcore otaku core, and I really think that's just the wrong way of doing this. Sorry, my son just bursted into my room. Can you just give me a moment, please?
Yeah, sure, no problem.
Sorry, I hope that was okay.
Yeah, it's fine, it's fine.
Sorry.
It's totally fine. So I gotta ask, like, for the three of you, is this sort of a dream project? Is this the medium that you want to be working in, on the schedule you want, on the project you want, and in the type, the style of story and character that, in your heart, as a creator, as a creative professional, this is your dream project? I mean, is that an accurate characterization?
Okay, I'll ask them. Ando-san feels that this is a very, very new way of doing making anime, and he feels it's very fresh, freshening to do it this way. He obviously hasn't been able to start because we're not funded yet, but he feels hopeful that this will become one of the new ways to create many animes.
What about for yourself?
Oh, okay. For me, obviously, I'm doing the. I have the vision to make this happen. I feel this is a, we want to make sure that this will become an ultimate dream for anime creators in Japan to do this, because I think it's not just about Japan, it's about the whole world. Mm-hmm. And I think animation is big enough to support the whole world as an industry, and being able to cater for countries other than Japan will allow animators to really explore topics and stuff they want to express in a much different way to it is now. I hope this gets funded by purely by backers, because this will really allow us to, play with all the toys that we can to make a wonderful anime. It's a great way for the animators and the designers and all the people that's involved in the animation process to actually really feel like they're contributing to a piece of work rather than working just for our production committee.
Right, and so, in other words, you mentioned that you did sort of agree with a lot of the criticisms of the anime industry right now, and mm-hmm. one of those, obviously, is that they are creatively risk-averse to the point where even a project like this has mm-hmm. difficulty finding funding,
exactly.
because it's not guaranteed to sell, statues and whatever they need to sell
right.
to make the show profitable. So that's the crowdfunding thing is exciting from the perspective of we can actually do these risky things and mm-hmm. not have to worry about the studio breathing down our neck, make it more commercial.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. We don't need to be worried about. To be very precise. Each company that's part of the production committee has a thing called a madoguchi, which basically means, the window entrance. And the window entrance means, that's a direct translation, by the way. The window entrance kind of means that, for example, if you're a record label and you give, $100,000 to a production committee, they'll give you a CD, they'll give you the rights to sell the CD, and that's how people make money. It's like, okay, if you're a record label and you're doing the, let's say, Idol Master anime, and then, you know, you get to sell the CDs, you make money from it, right? And therefore, as a record label's point of view, they want to really push just about the music. They don't really care about anything else. They just want to sell the music. And those kind of conflicts of interest between other within the production community really kind of negates the whole point of doing a film. I guess that's why I really want to do it without those kind of production committees and only with those people who care about making the film better.
Right. Excellent. Okay.
May I ask the same question to Jiro?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was gonna say it was for all three of you. So yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, so he wants to correct one thing, that to a certain extent in the production committee, you can work with other good people to a certain extent. So it's, that's not all bad, but in terms of being independent and working with other professionals without the intervention of other company, there are certain benefits in terms of being able to do exactly what you want. And it feels... the way this Kickstarter, if successful, will feel like the old days where the creators will be able to talk amongst themselves to actually make things happen.
So in the current environment, the creative staff doesn't really communicate directly with each other?
Well, they can, but they can't make the last final decision on it.
Oh, nobody's given that kind of editorial control.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that sounds a little stifling.
Well, unless you're like a desktop creator like Otomo-san, but even to a certain extent, Otomo-san would probably have discussions with people like Bandai Visual or whoever he's working with,
right.
And to a certain extent, like things like with Steam Boy when he was forced to bring it out prematurely, although he did take 10 years to do it. it's not really, it's not totally within his control.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I guess you can probably count the number of anime directors who have that kind of editorial control on one hand, maybe,
Yeah, or even yeah. One hand. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Okay. So I had a question for Mr. Ishii, and I know, these were video games, but you have produced a lot of projects with really complex stories that are sort of operate like a puzzle box. Very complicated, a lot of character motivations that run really deep, the characters are all connected, and it's complicated. You have to pay close attention to the story, really, to get the full experience of it, to really understand what's going on. It requires a lot of, full attention. You got to be focused. And I'm curious if we could make if we can expect that kind of storytelling from this project.
So Jiro Ishii-san says basically it's his trademark to make complex stories with very a small puzzle like materials inside. But it's not really his intention to make it difficult, but he really wants to give out his signature story writing with a complex puzzle with the satisfaction of a resolution at the end. He wants to really, as a professional, really strive to keep doing this because, it's basically his trademark.
Right. Well, it's good. It gives your brain a workout. You gotta really gotta focus.
Yes.
You can't watch it passively.
とても、とてもいいことだと思います。本当に集中して見なきゃ細かいことが分かんないので、それはとてもいいことだと思いますと言っております。ありがとうございます。頑張ります。Thank you very much.
We know why you were drawn to this project. You saw the influences in the script and were drawn to the story, and obviously Mr. Ishii wrote it. But we don't know why. What specifically about it drew in Mr. Ando?
So his main decision to really join the project was really about being able to work with Ishii-san, and the fact that he worked on Kanon, the anime, around five years ago, and that turned out very, very well, and he always thought that he wanted to do something like this again, and UTD was like the perfect opportunity to work with Jiro again.
Okay, and looking at, like, in terms of Mr. Ando's credits as a director, there's really nothing quite like this in there in terms of sort of dystopian science fiction. And I'm curious, is he looking forward to working in that kind of setting? Is there something, has he always wanted to, or is that the sort of a side thing?
His second, Ando-san's second reason for joining this project is not only just being able to work with Jiro, but as a genre, this is the first time he's going to explore this, and he always wanted to explore this science fiction dystopian settings. That's another reason why he joined the project.
Okay. All right. So I'm curious, so you launched the Kickstarter, and it's got about half of its time left. It's got about 12 days left.
Sure.
How many months of planning went into this? I mean, when did you guys come together? What was the starting point for the project? And how many months until you actually got it off the ground and launched the Kickstarter?
I think it was winter last year. So December last year, when Ishii-san, you know, we were working on another project together, and he brought me two fat bags full of stuff. And I remember saying to, it's like, why? What's all of this? I kind of didn't expect him to bring it. And he told me this was something that he worked on that didn't quite happen in around 1997. There was actually two stories. One was Under the Dog. The other one we'll probably not talk about yet. I was very me and my wife. We're very much intrigued with both stories, but especially with Under the Dog, and it had the general appeal of to me as a Western. I was brought up as a person who was brought up in the West, had a general appeal to do this, by that time, I just finished another Kickstarter called Project Phoenix, which was a JRPG that. We were very successful in raising money. We were trying to do a JRPG rebooted with very prestigious and old Final Fantasy developers combined with new developers from the West. And I think Jiro was intrigued about how I was able to make it happen, because I had a lot of friends in the industry, and we were talking about how we could possibly make Under the Dog happen as an anime. And you know, we had a few several blockades along the way, because although I have a lot of top creative friends which I drink around or have fun with, but obviously I never actually made an anime myself, just meeting friends and talking to friends kind of was very easy, and they all kind of jumped in the bandwagon because it was so exciting. The story was very it's very, very good. I don't think the Kickstarter page actually reflects how deep the story is, but we're so scared of actually giving away what we're trying to do, so we're trying to figure out a way to show more of the story without giving it away, which is very difficult.
Right.
Another thing is, the second person that came on the bandwagon was Ando-san himself, and he was very, as we discussed right before this question, he was very attracted to working with Jiro again, The next step was trying to get a studio to house the people that Ando-san's going to bring in and be the main workhorse of the actual production of the anime. And we went to... before that, we just had to decide who the illustrator was. And I always really liked the illustration by Yusuke Kozaki-san. And there's a very, very famous drawing of a sniper with a Barrett 50 cal. And she's in her school uniform and shooting, and it looks as if she's been shot as well. And there's some, instead of blood coming out, there's like flowers coming out of her. And there's another picture of another schoolgirl kind of probably being shot by the Barrett, but she's kind of snapped in half. But she's still firing her both her pistols, and it kind of had a huge impact on me. And I was suggesting to Ishii-san, I really want Kozaki-san to do this. And although Kozaki-san was a friend of a friend, so I could have contacted him. Jiro and I worked on a different project that involved Kozaki-san, so I just wanted Jiro to just ask him. And in the end, I sat with Kozaki-san in a restaurant to kind of convince him and tell him how awesome it could be. And it's the funny thing is, most people don't get it in Japan. Most creators are like clueless as to how this could happen, because this, I think they're so used to having a production committee or a huge company backing their project and making things happen, and in the end having to, you know, listen to these creators. They just have no idea how this could possibly happen, how something wonderful could happen like this. And it took me a while convincing, but once he got it, he really, you know, was very convinced that this could actually work. And then we started looking for a studio. We had two options on a studio. The other option, I don't want to name, but they're both very prestigious. And we decided to go with Kirikuma Citrus, because Ogasawara-san is an old friend of Jiro as well. And Ogasawara-san, who's the CEO of Kirikuma Citrus, has a very, very prestigious background of making animes. Like he's done Eureka, he's done a bit of Evangelion. He's obviously done he's XIG, so he's obviously done Ghost in the Shell, and he has a huge ideal for how anime should be made. But he's one of those people who's been battered by the industry and how everything works, and you know, and the low budgets that every year, the budget gets lower and lower, and every year they need to make anime that doesn't have a broad appeal to the rest of the fans around the world. And he's one of those disillusioned people until he met us, and now he's extremely excited and passionate about making this happen, and he really wants to make a change. He's very desperate to make a change, because he feels the only way Japan's animation will be saved is through the help of countries other than Japan to make this anime.
Well, so that leads me to a question. Do you think that the anime industry needs to be saved? And if so, from what?
Okay, I'm going to brave getting hated on, but I'm going to say this because I truly do believe in it. I think it doesn't need to be saved per se, but I do believe that it needs to be saved from a stereotypical kind of like a moe-only industry. Mm-hmm. I'm not against moe, but I am, you know, concerned about the amount of works there are. And that, to be honest, I feel that this only appeals to the minority of people who consume anime. And I feel that there are a lot more than just moe in the anime industry, and people like Ando-san's talent will be wasted if he just does moe for the rest of his life. You know, there are brilliant companies that I've worked with. Like I've worked on The Disappearance of Haruhi Suzumiya, it's not totally moe, but it's borderline, you know, they kind of started the moe with Haruhi and the Tsundere Factor. But I think that anime isn't just about that, or light novels, you know. Anime is much more than that. And in order for Japan to save themselves from our own stigma of moism, or, you know, doing things that just sell, I really feel that we need a external factor to actually counter the balance.
Right, and in a sense, prove that this can be done this way.
Exactly, bringing balance back to the force.
Right, that's a good way to put that. That's very interesting. From that perspective, you know, we get into this argument a lot on the American side of fandom about, you know, oh, there's too much of this, you know, it's saturating the market, like 17 out of 30 shows or 20 out of 30 shows are appealing to just this one audience, and we want more of the good stuff, you know.
Sure.
And stuff, something like, you know, obviously it hasn't been produced or anything yet, but generally based on, like, the promotional materials, it's like, okay, that's the kind of thing that fans sort of, you know, old-timers like me, and I'm your age, and I'm, you know, I'm an old-timer in this business. We look for that kind of stuff. Like, right now, everybody's big on, they're big on Space Dandy, and Al Noah Zero, and, you know, shows like that, where they're aimed at a little older audience, and they're not full of cute little girls or whatever. Do you pay attention to the seasons and see, like, sort of what percentage is actually that you personally find appealing?
Yeah, of course I do. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Cydonia.
Right. Yeah.
Knights of Cydonia, or, you know, Attack on Titan.
Right.
Actually, you know, the producer at Wit Studio actually showed me a very early stage of their animation before it was released, and I was already excited about that.
Right.
But, Those titles are few and far in between, because I think the Japanese industry has taken a turn on light novels instead of getting a lot of stuff from manga.
Right.
And, you know, Kadokawa, I would blame Kadokawa for a lot of the influence on that. Although, you know, I don't deny some of them are pretty fun to do. I mean, I was involved in Haruhi, I was involved in Steins Gate. But, you know, I think oversaturating the market like this is not the way to go. And, you know, Japanese companies have a tendency to kind of plunge in at things that work. Mm-hmm. So another example is plunging in at, you know, Japanese mobile games, where they buy, you know, 300 yen gacha cards, where you don't even know what you're buying, but randomly you get a card and you're paying like $3 for it.
Right.
It's just stupid. It's like you're buying data and just for a drawing or for a more character, and it does nothing for you. It's just data, and you don't even get, you know, if you get a sticker or whatever, that's kind of, I can kind of understand that. But these days, it's just getting, things are getting more morally, our moral compass is pretty screwed up, I think, in terms of the entertainment. And whatever I can do with the friends I have, I want to change. I want to change that.
Right. Well, you're certainly making a go of it.
Yes.
So I did want to ask, and this is an important question to me. What I guess chiefly for Mr. Ishii, but I'm curious on Mr. Ando's take on this. What would you say are the chief influences on this project from an art perspective and a writing perspective?
I'll ask Jiro first.
Okay.
In the 1997 setting of the story, Ishii-san has got the most influence from Evangelion and Nikita.
Okay.
In the 2014 version, there's a novel by which also became a film adaptation by Mr. Ishiguro, who wrote a book called Don't Let Me Go. So I'll ask Ando-san. But because Ando-san is a creator that kind of, like, you know, creates totally new stuff out of scratch,
right,
I'm not quite sure if he has influences over other, you know, he tries not, I believe he tries not to get influenced by other works, sort of, because that's kind of his profession. But I'll ask him anyway.
Well, I mean, if I could amend the question,
okay.
I would ask, since he's the director of the film, when he read the script,
mm-hmm.
did a vision for how this show should look, what the cinematography should look like, what how the action should be filmed. Did that immediately come into his head, and did that play a role in his decision to work on it?
So when he actually read the synopsis of the story, he didn't really have a very clear vision as to how he would show the story through picture. But when Ishii-san started talking about his inspiration from Nikita and Ishiguro, although he hasn't told him about this yet, these works like Nikita and Ishiguro's Don't Let Me Go had a profound impact on Ando-san. And after they talked about that, he had a very, 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 very clear vision as to how he wants to show the story.
Okay. Excellent. Okay, so I guess that comes to that brings us to the conclusion of my questions. But I have some questions for you from some fans on Twitter. Sure. Hopefully this is okay.
That's fine. Totally fine.
Our first question is from Shane Scalf, and they ask, would you make Under the Dog into a series, I mean, beyond the planned trilogy? So let's just assume the trilogy gets made. Mm-hmm. Would you turn it into a series if this all proves to be a success? Is the idea to eventually expand the story beyond those theatrical length OVAs, or what would you do?
Okay, so I've said this informally, but I will officially say this now. We already have offers for 26 episodes of Under the Dog,
okay,
which we've already turned down because we really want to protect our creative freedom.
Right.
And make sure the Under the Dog story is told the way we want it to be told. In a sense of doing a traditional TV series, no, we have absolutely no plans to do a TV series.
Okay, right.
However, that being said, if this, let's say we do the OVA and then it becomes a trilogy of films, and this persists to be a very, successful and sought after story, we really do want to continue this because I hate it when good shows just end.
Right.
Well, personally, and I would definitely convince Jiro to write more, which I'm pretty sure he would be happy to do so.
Right. Okay. Got a little bit of history here. Reed Nelson asks, this has nothing to do with Under the Dog, but he wants to know if Mr. Ando, because he's listed as key animation on, you remember Lupin the Third, the Hemingway papers?
Yep.
Yeah. He wants to know specifically if Mr. Ando animated the hilltop fight in that film.
The Lupin Third movie was, I think it was a TV special, was made in, made about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And he thinks he knows what the hilltop fight is, but he thinks it's not him.
I think it's not him. Okay.
Yes.
And just one more brain scratcher. Does he remember any of the sequences that he did key animation for in End of Evangelion?
End of Evangelion.
Yeah.
Okay. He doesn't. He didn't do a hell of a lot of scenes from Evangelion, but one of the highlights of what he did was when the number two Eva, Nigoki, the red one,
right?
That Asuka, and when the mass produced Evangelions fight, the one which looks like alligators. And you know the scene where the Spear of Longness kind of owns the second Eva number two.
Yeah,
That's the scene that he did.
Oh wow!
Yeah, the awesome
that's,
scene.
That's really cool.
Especially when after the spear has penetrated, Evangeline's arm just kind of like goes limp.
Yeah.
Especially that kind of like expression he did.
Oh wow, that's very impressive. Yeah, I'm a big fan of that movie. Land of Obscusion asks this is another animation question for Mr. Ando. In his early days, he did opening animations, like opening, the opening credits, and he just wants to know if there are any that he still feels especially proud of working on.
Okay, so which O'Neill were we talking about?
He just any of the ones that he worked on. If he has one that he particularly recalls fondly, or was very proud of his work on.
Okay, any anime?
Any opening? Yeah, that's
any
sort of
opening.
Sort of a general question. Yeah.
Ando-san says because the openings are really around 90 seconds, and it's all very 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 short film. It's kind of all fulfilling because it's because they can really make a lot in 90 seconds, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry about the broader answer.
Oh no, it's fine. It's totally fine. That's great.
When he worked on Hanasaku Iroha, they had to do two openings. And in terms of that, he had a lot of hardship in terms of making those openings because, you know, usually you only get asked to do one opening and you can do whatever. But when you're doing the second one, it's really hard to, you know, get more great ideas about a opening for the same title. Mm-hmm. So in terms of that... He felt the hardships were very fulfilling in terms of working on the opening. Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. We got two left here.
Mm-hmm.
First one from Custom Zaku asks: Orange is known for quality 3D work, which seems to be in high demand. Do you have any comment on how they were brought onto this project?
Okay, sure. Orange works very much with Kinema Citrus, and Kinema Citrus only trusts Orange to do their 3D CG. And Ogasawa-san literally begged me to take Orange on board, and I was fine with it because I trusted his decision.
Right, and yeah, that I mean, and actually, if I could ask a follow up on that, in general. What are your thoughts? And actually, I'd also like Mr. Ando's thoughts and Mr. Ishii's thoughts, if they have an opinion on this. In general, what are your thoughts on the state of Japanese CG animation? Is Orange the only studio you trust, or is like, how do you feel about it right now in its current state?
Okay. With my background on computer graphics, I obviously work in the video game industry, and I've also worked with people from Blizzard as well. And I have a lot of friends in the Blizzard cinematic department, which basically a lot of the industry people says they're the best in the best in the industry.
Right.
Having a look at Japanese 3D CG companies, I'm friends with people from Kara. They're the guys who are making Evangelion right now.
Right.
And also Kamikaze Douga, which did stuff like opening to Fire Emblem, lots of other cool stuff. If you look at Kamikaze Douga, they're very, very good at what they do, but trying to not be like computer graphic-y, but more like anime in terms of expression. I think those Orange, Kamikaze Douga, and Kara-san are the premier Japanese 3D CG anime company, which is very different from just a cinematic company, cinematic department Blizzard Entertainment.
Right.
So, I think the state of the industry, I think people like Kamikaze-san and Kara-san and Orange will make a difference because they try to make sure that it's very anime in terms of in the approach of 3D computer graphics.
Right.
And I'm sure they're going to continue to do a great work in that regards. I forgot to mention, which Jiro reminded me, that especially with TV series animation with full computer graphic, like absolutely everything is computer graphic, he would like to also mention companies such as Sanjigen and also Polygon Pictures, who did Cydonia actually. Some of the companies to look out for.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to ask Ando-san.
Okay.
Although the Japanese anime industry started as a 2D base, he really believes that there's very very interesting companies that does 3D based anime, And he wishes that there'll be more ways to connect 3D and 2D together to make new works. Just so as you know, for as a background, Ando-san excels in cell animation, which means 2D animation of drawings.
Right.
So I guess considering his background, you probably understand why he actually answered that way. And Ando-san would also like to add that Under the Dog is a very ideal way of putting 2D and 3D together as a hybrid. And this is the first time he's working with Orange. Mm. And he feels that Orange is a very, very good company to be working with.
Great. Okay. All right. Okay, last question, and hopefully this was not something that only Mr. Ishii could answer, but if you can give it a shot, that would be great.
Sure.
Red Train Claire asks, what factors influenced the design of the trike? Many older anime have had futuristic motorcycles, but this one seems a little unique.
Right. Okay, that's my question, actually.
Oh, okay, great.
The trike is actually my input to the creation. Ishii-san wanted to do a homage to Akira. So, you know, there's that bike, which is awesome, that I think Kaneda rides. But we wanted a vehicle which had a military application of a hit and run whilst being stable enough to shoot from. And that's how the idea came from. And how we made the trike was we actually asked Kozaki-san to do the original base design for the trike, and then basically go on to I took it to a product designer, a professional product designer who actually does design bikes, but he remains nameless because he needs to protect his job, his day job.
Right.
So I actually took it to him, and he actually professionally done a product design for the trike with the application that is intended for during the film, and also obviously spiced it up with aesthetics looks by Kozaki-san himself. So that's how we came up with the trike.
Yeah, one of the screenshots on the Kickstarter page is like, oh, Akira.
Yeah.
You got the trailing light there, which is iconic at this point.
Yes, it is, yeah. So, I mean, we do, we love Akira, and we want to make a lot of homage to Akira. Obviously, having our, core, what we want to tell as a story is a little different from Akira. So, it's our way of paying respect.
Right, exactly. And you stop me if I'm wrong on this. I detect a little bit of influence from the vehicles from the Christopher Nolan Batman films, just a little bit.
Oh, I think that is also my input. it's not specifically Batman, but I think the way you it's good that you feel that way, because as with everything I do, with the video game Project Phoenix or with Under the Dog, I believe in Western functionality with Eastern, Japanese aesthetics. The Japanese are very good at making awesome designs, right?
Right.
But a lot of them are not functional. It's like, you know, why? I mean, Evangelion or, Gundam or Macross, they look cool. But a lot of things just looks cool, and it doesn't have any backgrounds as to why it's designed that way.
Right.
Evangelion just gave a little leeway to that by putting a power cord to the back of the unit, but still, it's still so far fetched from reality.
Right.
It's cool, but it's not cool enough because there's no reasoning behind it. And because I was brought up with a lot of Blizzard games, and I did work with Blizzard, and that gave me a lot of influence from how they work, is Blizzard basically makes a world before they make the... Well, it feels that they make the lore, and they really treasure the world that characters thrive in, not the other way around. They don't make, I don't believe they make the character and then make the world around the character.
Right.
I feel that... that Western approach of making things is interesting if you, you know, if you combine it with Japanese aesthetics. You get something that looks cool with functionality, and that's even cooler.
Right. Yeah. That's really cool. All right. Excellent. Okay. So that actually wraps us up. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. That's our show. Huge thanks to Hiroaki Yura, Masahiro Ando, and Jiro Ishii for stopping on by. The theme song is Bucharest by the band New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week. Only 2 episodes left until the 200th episode.